And welcome back. I'm Alex Hoyer. Coming up next, Dance St. Louis opens its 50th season with the Paul Taylor Dance Company. But first, Composers for Social Justice. It's a concert happening next Tuesday evening, October 6th, at the Two Hill Performing Arts Center at the University of Missouri-St. Louis. It will feature the University Orchestra and University Singers. The concert will also include the premiere of Barbara Harbach's composition called Symphony for Ferguson. Joining me now is Barbara Harbach, who's also a curator's professor of music at UMSL. Welcome to the program, Barbara.
Thank you. Delighted to be here.
Also with me in studio is James Richards, interim dean and professor of music at UMSL. He's also the conductor of the University Orchestra. Welcome to you, James.
Thanks.
James, let me start with you. Why are you doing a concert about social justice?
It's very interesting how programs come together. I think there are a lot of different formulas or a lot of different reasons. In this case, it started, Barbara, you have to fill in the gap, maybe a year or a year and a half ago, talking about this piece, a piece that certainly turned out to be focused on Barbara's perceptions about Ferguson, the issues that have come to our community. But we've been talking about a new piece, and we've done several premieres with university ensembles of her works. So when this piece came along, you start thinking about what companion works might fit musically, artistically, time-wise. And it just sort of evolved that with the Ferguson theme, that it might be interesting to look at what other composers through history, how they had addressed social justice issues in their time.
And Barbara or James, I don't know who wants to take this, but how have other composers addressed it?
Well, just to be specific with the list, we open with Beethoven's Symphony No. 3, the first movement. This piece, as many people know, was quite ceremoniously dedicated to Napoleon, a great man and his accomplishments, and was equally unceremoniously undedicated when he turned to different types of politics, declared himself emperor, and was not in that same favor. So it's a piece that has sort of a dual meaning. We also include a work by George Walker, an American composer still living, Lyric for Strings. Of the few pieces of his I know, this is one of the most played and a very beautiful work for string orchestra.
And let me interrupt here. George
Sure.
Walker, he's in his 90s now, and he wrote Lyric for Strings, I see, in 1947. First African-American to win the Pulitzer Prize for music. That's a significant accomplishment. And I can only imagine the kind of social injustices that he would have encountered when he was doing his work.
Well, I think is his career as well as in his schooling. He has a number of firsts to his name, and not to get into all of them, but he was the first African-American to graduate from Curtis at one of our premier conservatories, first African-American to earn a doctorate from the Eastman School of Music, I think first black instrumentalist to perform with the Philadelphia Orchestra. So he really blazed many trails and has a prominent place on this program.
And one of the things we were talking about before we went on the air is that when you hear a piece of music, you don't know whether the composer is black, white, Hispanic. You don't know really anything about them except for the music you hear, and good music is good music.
Absolutely, yes.
I don't think we would argue with that. I mean, certainly composers, they have influences in their lives, and I think there are things after you learn a piece that probably show through about that composer's, at least their artistic background. But in this case, no. I think there's nothing about this piece that would label it as coming from any particular background other than a great musical training.
And then next in the program is your new symphony, Barbara. It's going to be the premiere of Symphony for Ferguson. When did you decide that you were going to write this?
I think we were all devastated last 2014 when we had the tragedy in Ferguson and with Michael Brown. And all artists, I think, were reeling on how to express our feelings. And so I started thinking about writing an orchestral piece. And so I went and thought about it a while and came up with the first movement, Heroes. And the heroes are first responders, people who are just kind and caring to strangers. It's all sorts of heroes, even from the war's heroes, the Civil War, which I'm always very interested in. And so heroes of all kinds. So I thought that felt good to be in Ferguson.
Are you particularly singling out specific people or specific groups?
Not particularly. Good question there. But no, not just. Just there were so many, at so many different levels, heroes who helped out and who did so much. And so I just kind of drew a long line through history for the heroes. And it was dedicated to all of them, including Ferguson.
The second movement is The Fallen. Tell me a little bit about that.
The Fallen is all the war dead, people who have fallen through wars or through tragedies or through drive-by shootings or, you know, the fallen. And so, yeah, that meant a lot to me also to honor them and have some memory for them.
And then the last movement, the third, Together in Harmony, of course, probably an ideal state.
Yes, that would be, and getting all the disparate factions together and to play. And so it has a fanfare in it, a real robust fanfare. It also has fugues, tiny little fugues in there, but it also has W.C. Handy's St. Louis Blues for orchestra. I had a lot of fun writing that. We even added an electric bass to it and plus a drum set. So the place will rock.
One of the emails that we received from a listener, this is a few months back, but it went something like, "Stop it, stop it, stop it. Enough with Ferguson. Why do you keep talking about it?" What would be your response to that?
Sort of like the Holocaust. It should never be forgotten. It happened. We should remember it and try to move on, not move on past it, but move on and somehow intersect and interconnect with all people.
James?
You know, Alex, I think this program, we've been pretty conscious of the fact we're not endorsing any particular position about rights or wrongs or long-term injustices or any particular social position. I do hope that the people who would come, and frankly, as well as the people on stage doing the performing, though, that this grouping of pieces, certainly Barbara's premiere, cause people to address their own feelings, their own positions on certain issues, and simply to recognize that a lot of these issues are longstanding, prevailing challenges that we have. And indeed, as Barbara was saying, that Together in Harmony, the third movement of her symphony, maybe reflects some optimism that we can and will address issues that exist for our community, particularly for our students. I don't want them to come on stage as performers feeling like they're endorsing a particular social position, but that we're pointing out a number of places through history that this has been of real consequence.
And that's really the role of what art should do, whether it's visual, music. Art should make us think about life and about society.
I think that's what we all would hope as performers, certainly when we put together a program, when we walk on stage, that we have an impact that's beyond just written words or any other thing, but there's a very thoughtful component to everybody who's involved.
You mentioned that you don't want the people performing, the college students, feeling like they're taking a position on any one side, if we can say that. But I was also thinking that this kind of a lineup, a concert for social justice, that this is unlike some of the other concerts that these musicians would have been in before, dozens of concerts that they've been in before. Have they been approaching it differently, do you think?
That's really hard to answer. I think it's a very individual question. As we started rehearsing each of these pieces, we took some time to talk about the significance of the piece, not maybe as much as we've even talked about today, but a little bit about my thinking that went into putting the program together. So I think there's an awareness. How individuals respond to that is pretty much a personal factor. I mean, everyone who comes on stage, including some of those students, will have been have grown up in the Ferguson-Florissant School District, have maybe lived very near them. I mean, the campus is not located that far from Ferguson,
right,
has been very central to many issues. Each has a personal perspective. I guess I would be disappointed if each of them didn't then have a personal response. But what I'm saying is we don't want them to feel like they are taking a particular side in the issue. I do hope that everyone on stage is committed to the fact that these are important issues and that we're demonstrating through our music that great composers through history have had strong feelings and have expressed those through great pieces.
Barbara Harbrock, this is your 10th symphony. That's a lot
of
symphonies.
Yeah, it is when I look back on it. Yes, mm-hmm. It is. And there is sort of a myth that, well, not quite a myth that goes by that a lot of composers died after their 9th. So I decided I'd write 10.
Spell that rumor.
Yes.
Beethoven, for example,
died
after his 9th symphony. And I understand that with this new symphony, you're borrowing a bit from some of the other symphonies that you've composed.
Yes, especially from my musical booth we actually took to Broadway a couple years ago. And they used one of those themes in it, Johnny, You're No Hero. And it actually is Johnny, You're No Hero, John Wilkes Booth. And it was about Edwin, his older brother, and Edwina, who was Edwin's daughter. So it was about what happens to a family when one member does such a heinous act as killing Abraham Lincoln.
What do you hope people walk away with after hearing your symphony?
hopefully maybe they could hum a few bars. No, I just hope they enjoy it and enjoy the students who are very enthusiastic and they're doing a great job. And especially I want to thank Jim. He's doing a great job. My favorite conductor. He does almost, I think, all my premieres just about. Mm-hmm. Poor guy.
Thank you.
And of course, James, as a conductor, it's your job to interpret what's been composed. How have you interpreted what Barbara has composed?
Well, it is a little different having the composer sort of figuratively standing over your shoulder, but it's a great advantage too. We don't talk about it a lot. One aspect that we have is, indeed, I have conducted quite a number of Barbara's pieces, mm-hmm. so I feel like I have a fairly good basis of knowing about her compositional style and the kinds of things she's wanted from those pieces in the past. A conductor gets a score, and you start looking at it for, you know, all sorts of things, for technical content, suitability to your ensemble, what the challenges will be, and then you dig a little farther into meaning, why the tunes that were quoted or were chosen, what they mean that's different by being side by side or even simultaneous, that they don't mean just out in the world alone, maybe as a folk song. There are a number of quotations in this. Barbara mentioned the one from Booth, but there are many much more familiar, daily familiar songs that are drawn on for their thematic content or something to be developed. So you just sort of start to absorb it. In this case, it's really three pieces, three different movements. They each have their own content. And try to find something really significant to say in each one. And the players contribute to this very much too. I'm always pleased when a player comes up with a great idea about how to phrase something or a little different balance happens in rehearsal or something. So it's an evolving process, but it starts with the composer's ideas on paper and then transmits through a conductor. And in the end, the conductor makes no sounds. So it's all the players on stage.
There's going to be a narrator that's part of this concert. What's the purpose of the narrator?
Well, the narrator was not a mandatory part, but we felt with the sort of conversation we've had today that perhaps a little bit of context about the piece, why the piece was included on the program. In our case, our particular narrator, Jacqueline Thompson, who's a member of the theater faculty at UMSL, has very strong knowledge and personal experience about some of these issues. And she's brought together a number of little thematic ideas, introductions, quotations about the composers, about the piece that I think simply will make it more meaningful to the audience.
And there are two other pieces for the Concert for Social Justice. Could you briefly explain the other two?
Yes. The next to last work is a work just by the University Singers. It does not involve the orchestra. It's a spiritual from, I believe, South Carolina traditions called Ask the Watchman. It's arranged by Caldwell and Ivory. And it also has text that is involved with various themes of particularly of the Southern United States and that kind of issue. And the final piece is undoubtedly one of the most familiar tunes in this country, and that is Battle Hymn of the Republic. It's a very impressive, very stirring rendition arrangement of this particular piece for full orchestra and chorus to finish the program.
Well, it sounds like it's going to be a great concert. I want to thank you, James Richards, for joining us, and also you, Barbara Harbach.
Thank you.
The premiere of your 10th symphony, Symphony for Ferguson.
Yes,
All right. Thank you. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Alex.
The UMSL University Orchestra and University Singers present Composers for Social Justice. It's Tuesday, October 6th at 7:30 in UMSL's Two Hill Performing Arts Center. It's a free concert. Coming up next, Dance St. Louis opens its 50th season with the Paul Taylor Dance Company. This is Cityscape on St. Louis Public Radio 90.7 KWMU.